CliffCentral.com.
And let's go. Good morning, everybody. All right, you've made it to Monday morning at 6 o'clock, so I suppose some credit is due. And I hope your day is off to a perfect start. I woke up this morning, dark. So I was like, you know, normally I'd get up and I'd walk around with my cell phone as a torch, which I think we all do. And then you try to, like, switch on the tap, see if the water's warm. It usually isn't when there's been load shedding. Then you you try to, like, brush your teeth and wash your face and get your day started. The water's nice and cold, so that wakes you up really quickly. And then you walk around like an idiot. You're, like, you're shining this at everything, trying to see what you're doing. And because it's so super early and there's no power, there's no point in me going downstairs to the kitchen to try and make a, like, cup of coffee or anything. So you kind of just sit there going for about, I don't know, 20 minutes, feeling like an idiot. But we're here this morning and we are live. We've got Mash and we've got Ass, and it's going to be me, you, and them this morning. So how are you doing, Mash?
Yes. I am good. Had quite a weekend, but yep. Nonetheless, I am amazing, Gareth.
What did you do this weekend? Sounds like you had fun.
Oh, did a lot this weekend. I mean, for starters, my weekend was quite eventful. A lot of things happened. A lot of ridiculous things actually happened.
Yeah.
For starters, I went out on a date, so that was fun.
Went on a date. Okay, so how did the date go? And is it with this person who's asked you to move in with them?
No, it wasn't.
You've already moved on, huh? Didn't take you long.
I haven't moved on exactly, but I decided to just take things slow. And I always say, I mean, you know dating. You know how dating works, the dynamics of dating nowadays.
You're speaking to someone who's completely lost his ability to do any of that stuff. So, no, you'll have to take baby steps with me when you talk about this show.
Well, you can't just go out with one person nowadays. You can't just put all your eggs in one basket.
You have
to just split them out a bit and then just narrow it down. You know, it's levels nowadays, so you just have to narrow it down with each level. So some people are getting eliminated, some are still remaining in the running, but either way, we're having fun and keeping it going. So
this weekend's
date was fairly odd to say the least, but went well. I went on a date with someone in the afternoon 2 days back on Saturday.
Afternoon is good, because if you like them, then you can carry it on into the night. But if you don't like them, you can say, oh, well, you know, I've got plans for this evening, so unfortunately I can't do anything else, and we'll have to just call this short. So is that correct? Is that about right?
That is about right. Yeah. So what happened with this date, I have to confess, though, I did double book myself for dates. So I had a date, and I thought it wasn't going to go that well.
Yeah.
So I actually, because I mean, sometimes you chat with someone over the phone and the conversation is a bit dry over the phone, over WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, yeah, if it's this dry over WhatsApp, there's no way it's going to be any more entertaining in real life. So I just kept it moving. Hi, Leanne.
We're just hearing from Mash. He was double booked on dates this weekend, which, I mean, you know, some of us have problems finding one date every 6 months. This guy's got like two on one day. It's ridiculous.
I was going to say, what's the problem?
Yeah. So did you manage to make both feel special? Did you get anything good out of the dates? Do you think you'll see either of these people again?
I might just see one of them again, because the first one, I really didn't expect much. I thought, the conversation is so boring over WhatsApp, so it will be boring in person. So I did actually schedule about 2 hours max for this date.
Yeah.
Now, 30 minutes before the second date was scheduled, I realized that, oh, crap, there's 30 minutes left and this conversation is actually really flowing. I thought it'll be way over. So now I realized that, crap, I had actually double booked myself. So I decided to, you know what? Let's pay this bill and go home. I actually have an emergency, blah, 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 blah. So I just went to my car, sat in the car for about 5 minutes, and then told and I told the other person, hi, yeah, I'm here. So just meet me here, rather. It was close to where we were actually supposed to meet. And they came to the exact restaurant, and I went right back in.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you just managed to palm off one and bring in the other. That's very, very, that's deft footwork on your part. I mean, to yes. be able to, yeah, you managed that. You managed that very, very well. I've got to give you full points.
But well, what about the staff? Wouldn't they have said?
I did brief the waiter. Oh, the waiter who okay. actually helped us, I did say, listen here, don't say again. Don't use repetitive words. Don't say again. Don't say, what would you like this time? Just treat me like a new customer, please.
That's very good.
And that yeah,
because the waiter could have spoiled everything for you if they'd slipped up.
Oh, jeez. Well, yes, absolutely. Oh,
there's Mash in the dark, please, and then we'll have the generator kick in, and then he'll be back on with us in a second. All right, so any excitement over your weekend, Leanne?
Are you kidding?
I was taking a chance.
You saw my reaction to Mash's dating story.
Yeah, you were excited. You wished you were him. You were vicariously living through him during that story.
Yeah, no, nothing exciting. I mean, just surviving load shedding. I think for me, I've got to squeeze all the work I can into a small amount of hours. So it's kind of motivating in a way, because if you have a day of 8 hours to do something, mm-hmm. to do a couple of tasks, it seems like a lot, and you probably procrastinate a lot. Mm-hmm. But when you've got 2 or 3 hours to get something done, it kind of helps that deadline mentality looms and mm-hmm. helps you get things done quickly.
Well, I mean, you used to be pretty good at this stuff. I mean, you probably still are. When you decide to do things if you've only got a certain window period of time, and I was talking about this last week, you know, load shedding, you can either get upset about it, which we all are, but what's the point? Because it's just going to drive your blood pressure up and make you unhappy, right? You've got to find a way of making it work for you. So if it means the only thing that is really, really shit for me is that I don't really look at the schedules, and then when I want to like make food, for example, at night, because I mean I don't really have big lunches or breakfasts, so at night I might want to cook something, and then it's a bit of a problem. But otherwise, like if it goes dark, it goes dark. I actually got into bed on Friday, went out for a family birthday dinner, and got back at like I don't know, maybe 11 at night, which wasn't so late. And I just got straight into bed, which was the best thing. I mean, like, that's cool. If you don't have to be anywhere, you don't have to dress up, you don't have to have virtual meetings, then you can do lots of work because bed is the best place to be. And you basically just take those 2 to 4 hours, because today I think we're going back to level 6 or something. Who the hell knows, right? If it isn't stupid coronavirus levels, then it's stupid ESCOM levels. I mean,
also we seem to be handed these excuses on a golden platter for not meeting deadlines, not making it to meetings, wearing pajamas, not drying your hair.
Are you kidding? Like, you know, we spoke to one of our clients the other day, and they're like, can we talk about this in like 2 months' time? And I'm like, what?
What?
2 months? What are you going to be doing for 2 months before we next have to talk about this? It's like people have become really, really expert at like pushing things another month or two. And they used to, when you could get away with saying the pandemic, people would do that. But now you can't say that. So ESCOM, or you know, like the whole, our staff, we're only half the people come in on this day, half the people, there's always something. It's bullshit.
There is always something. Mm. There's always, I mean, it I is, know.
It, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one excuse, especially since it's month end, clients have to pay invoices. Mm-hmm. And that's the excuse I've been hearing a lot of this past week, that, the load shedding. I'm like, what?
Right.
Load shedding doesn't affect your banking app, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. It really is. You know, it's total nonsense. This weekend, though, was also cool because I got to do a whole lot of things around the house that I have been putting off for ages. And you know, some of these things cost money, so you just put them off for good reasons because there's just no money in the account. Or you put them off because you're too lazy to do it. It's like, you know, you have to replace this thing, repair that thing, fix that, paint that, tidy that up. And I got quite a bit of that done this weekend, so I felt quite productive. The problem is, some stuff you can't do when there's no power on, like vacuuming or, you know, if you're going to use a drill or any of that shit. So even there, I've had to like put stuff off. So I mustn't complain too loudly about other people putting stuff off for a month or two, because I'm just as bad. Like, it might not be a month or two, but it's a day or two. And I'm definitely feeling like I need to get going again, like properly, full, you know, all the cylinders, full steam ahead. I've had enough of this like half and half stuff now. It was fun for a while.
Yeah.
And I really did enjoy, I think like lockdown taught a lot of us, and you know, maybe not just lockdown, but all the excuses that came with it taught a lot of us mm-hmm. how to value our mm-hmm. time. And this is what you're saying about your schedule now. But I don't think we need to be buggering around there anymore. It's time to get on with it now. I want to see things going at full steam.
Yeah. It's also infuriating when, you know, you could accept COVID because it was a disease, but when it's ESCOM and avoidable by better management, then you become less tolerant.
Like this is the funny thing about this whole situation, and we're not going to talk about this all morning because it really is all that South Africa is talking about today, but there's no insights I can give you, right, that you haven't already seen. But this obviously is all about bad management, wage negotiations that have gone horribly wrong, unions asking for outrageous things. I mean, you know, the average salary at ESCOM is like over 60 grand a month. The average salary, average out of 43,000 odd employees, the average salary.
I'd be willing to live with the stone throwing and occasional beatings.
Oh, sign me up.
I mean, 60 grand a month for 40,000 employees is crazy. And I don't think those people should have any right to ask for more. They're asking for double-digit increases. They want like 80% medical aid contributions. They want extra vehicle subsidies. I mean, these are things that nobody else in the working world gets anymore. Vehicle subsidies, medical aid, 80% contributions. No one in private industry gets that. ESCOM is the third best paying employer in South Africa, and it does the worst job. So I don't feel like we need to have any sympathy with the workers here. The workers can get screwed. They can fire the whole lot of them and start again. And frankly, it seems like these workers would be a good thing to get rid of them. Most of them don't know what they're doing. Otherwise, we would have had power up to now, wouldn't we? So it's time. Anyway, we'll leave that alone. There's other stuff that we've got to get to today. And a lot of it is fun, and a lot of it is light, and a lot of it is not so heavy. But some of it we want to touch on straight away. So apart from MASH, a lot of comments coming in for MASH this morning about how... How your dating metric is so messy, according to Sanele. Did you at least give the waiter a good tip for not giving you up?
I did give the waiter a very fat tip. So I made sure that I was actually not giving up.
Good. No, that makes sense. And then someone else here saying that they think that you're actually incredible. Like, how did you manage to get that right? They say, same restaurant, this guy's a damn pro, it's Sanele. Ha, ha, ha. So, yeah.
I've learned to become very good at because of load shedding is time management. I've learned to be so good at this. I was okay at it before, but now I'm like a pro. I actually plan my days ahead, at least a day in advance. Mm. So my entire schedule, when I'm going to work, when I'm going on a date, when this, when that, I plan it all around load shedding to make sure that when I get home, there's always power. Because my apartment is freezing. I can't sleep without an electric blanket on. So I have no other choice but to do so.
Well, I mean, if you can get out of there, that's also a good way. I went to the gym the other day. I said when the load shedding for 4 hours kicked in, I was like, well, they've got all the equipment I need to do some exercise. They've got a hot shower. I'm going to go there. And I'll worry about the rest when I get home. So that was my plan the other day. Listen, there are things you can do, right? I mean, if you want to sit and complain, that's fine. Everybody gets, you have the right to complain. I mean, it's reasonable to be pissed off at the moment. But use the time. Find a way to do things. I'm also doing this really not such an exciting thing. It's a diet that I'm on. I'm trying to just lose like 5 kilos just to see if I can. And a lot of people have been saying to me, oh, diets don't work, and, you know, trying to demotivate me effectively. But I'm enjoying the discipline of it. And also, I don't have to think...
Is it an eating plan, like from a dietitian?
No, so it's like 14 days. They give you breakfast, lunch, and supper, what you've got to do for those 14 days. And it worked for a very good friend of mine. So he said, try this. So I'm going to give it a go, and I'll report back at the end of week two. I'll have done a week by tomorrow. Oh. So
what are you cutting out and what are you leaving in?
You know, it's really not that interesting. I mean, it's like you have to have it's like boiled eggs, which is so fucking horrible. I hate those. But it's not, it's different every day. So like, for example, yesterday for lunch, I had to have steamed fish and tomatoes. Then, So some of it's, some of it is not so great, and some of it is great. But there's nothing exotic on there. It's like you have to have a green salad for lunch. Then, you know, for breakfast today, I'm so lucky. Today I get a cup
Mash,
of...
Mash was trying so hard to be open-minded.
I know, it's so shit.
He was like, okay, so like, what is it?
And then I tell him and it's fish like, and boring as hell. For breakfast today, I get a black cup of coffee and I can have as much black coffee as I like. But no milk, no sugar. Like,
this is a very 80s diet.
It is. It's so crap. And
I'm coming from a place of a lot of experience.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to see if it works. You know, if it does nothing, then screw that. Then I'm going to go back to where I was.
It doesn't instill that little bit of discipline and...
And I don't like, you know, I don't like thinking...
The will.
I don't like thinking too much about what to eat. So it's like I've got a plan and I just have to eat this stuff and then I'm happy. You know, I'm hungry a lot of the time, but I'll be fine. I'll be happy. I'm going to give it 2 weeks. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Too bad.
The thing with losing weight, especially, I've learned personally, because I've actually lost 30 kgs last year, by the way. Last 30? Year, I lost
what?
30 kgs. Yes.
Jeez.
Are you kidding?
Dude, I didn't think you were never that big. Where did you lose the weight? Did you have big feet that you were hiding in shoes that weighed like 20 kilograms each? How the hell did you get that right?
I actually had, I had like very large hips and jeez, I lost weight everywhere, actually.
Didn't
I lost
that.
Weight everywhere.
That's amazing.
I lost a lot of weight.
How did you do it?
Was actually, I learned that for me personally, it wasn't about dieting or changing what I'm eating, but rather substituting certain items. So, for example, I completely cut out sugar, completely. So instead of having sugar, I was having sweetener or lemon. Mm-hmm. And instead of having like sweet drinks and juices and all of that, I replaced all of that with either water, coffee with sweetener, or I just had a Coke Zero. So the no sugar drinks. And that was the biggest determining factor for me. And I lost so much weight so fast, along with gymming, of course. I went to gym a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
Look, I'm never going to discredit you, but I will just say one thing. It does seem, and I was also married for a time, and if I wanted to lose weight, I would have to go on the type of diet that Gareth's on. But my partner would just stop drinking Coke and having sugar in his coffee, and he would lose weight so much easier. So I'm not discrediting you and saying it's easy, but I'm like, sure. That's amazing, though. That is truly amazing.
Listen, know what it all comes down to is discipline. I mean, everybody and everybody's body is different and everybody has a different, reaction to sugar or to fat or to whatever. So there's no like one cure for all. And I also don't think that diets are necessarily good for you because your body gets shocked. Like 1 minute it's eating this, the next minute it's eating that. Then, you know, the essential ingredient here is discipline. Like Mash says he cut out sugar. If that's your thing, then cut out sugar and see if that works for you. If you follow a specific diet for however many weeks, do it. See what happens. If it doesn't work for you, try something else. But there's a combination. And like I've always been pretty good about being disciplined about exercise. But now I need to be disciplined about eating. And I'm going to see if it makes a huge difference. If it does, awesome. Then I'll report back and we'll see how it goes from there. But it might not work for me like it worked for this other person.
But I do know that what you eat actually makes up the largest portion of your fitness as compared to the exercise.
Yeah,
so you will definitely see a difference. You will. And you guys can actually see my before and after pictures because I did post quite a lot of them on Instagram.
Ah.
We, yeah. I used to be huge.
Well, go. I'll put up your.
That's amazing.
I'll put up your Instagram handle. So, Mash says this is different. Mash Mashinini says it works. Gee, I had an eating program in 2018. I lost 25 kilograms over 8 months. Gymming and doing track exercises at the stadium in some afternoons. Just discipline and consistency. Yeah, there it is. There it is.
If I just think of parking at a stadium and walking to the stands, that's enough for me.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, I mean, the most interesting thing about all of this, though, is just kind of how easy it is if you, again, I would always go to the fridge and go, oh, what do I want now? And then there'd sometimes be nothing in the fridge that I wanted, but you kind of make your way, right? And with this, I know exactly what I'm having. I just look at the list and I'm like, okay, good. I'll do that today. And frankly, it's a hell of a lot easier making breakfast if it's just a piece of old dry bread than if you have to cook a whole thing. A lot of this stuff is not complicated to make. It's really easy to cook and to do. Anyway, so Cabello says sugar is the devil. Sparkling water is a great substitute for sugary fizzy drinks. Mm-hmm. That is true. That's a good one. Water in general, I drink a lot of water. So I think that my water intake is pretty good. I'm
making me thirsty.
I reckon I'm probably doing maybe 4 liters a day? Maybe even more, maybe up to 6.
It's a lot of water.
Yeah. I drink a lot of water but it must be cold. That's another reason when the fridge hasn't been working for a while and that water's like a little bit less than very. I love the cold, the feeling of like really cold water in your mouth and going down your throat's the best thing ever. I can't drink like lukewarm tap water. Can't stand that feeling. It's horrible. Ugh. Anyway, there are a couple of other things that are on the list that we need to get to that I mentioned earlier. So first of all, SARS doesn't owe Candace Funamadova a $44 million refund on a politician's gift. So this is an interesting story. You remember that Candace Funamadova went over to, I think, Dubai or somewhere like that. She ended up getting a huge gift. Lebanon, that's right. She got a gift, and I mean, these things should raise any eyebrows, right? From this guy who decided, I'm going to give you a couple of million. And he did. And then when she got back here, apparently SARS just took their share of it. They're like, okay, well, we'll have that. Thank you. Of course, SARS thinks they can take whatever they want, and many people think that they can. But what's the actual story here? The court has ruled that SARS doesn't have to give her the money back. She had to actually hand it over.
Yeah. She tried to fight it. And it was pretty obvious because her salary certainly wasn't anything amazing. And her tax bill as a result wasn't really amazing either. I mean, in 2014, she earned an average of 30,000 Rand per month. The tax came to 13,000 Rand for the year.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, she got a gift from a companion abroad. In fact, it was the Lebanese prime minister, who's now former. But they met at a place called the Plantation Club and Resort in the Seychelles in 2012. She was 20, he was 43, and he decided to give her this sponsored trip money to add a bit of glamour to the resort.
Wow.
He, at the time, was a father of three and married as well, decided to give over this money.
This is why you've got to be rich. As a guy, there's just no, it doesn't matter what you look like. You just have to have tons of money. You can have any beautiful girl accompany you anywhere. If you give her money, she'll go with you. If you don't have money at the age of 50 and you're a guy and you want to get married or you find someone attractive and you don't have cash, too bad. It's not going to happen for you.
That is true.
But I mean, like, how much? Wow. Because this gift was 142.9 million rand.
Jesus. He must have really liked
they
her.
They didn't know each other before this at all.
No.
Okay, he says the plantation in the Seychelles?
That's where we need to go, yeah. That's where you've got to go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, if you want to meet someone really, really hot and you're looking for a sugar daddy or you're looking for a gift, I mean, go. That's where you got to do it. I think it's awesome.
Sheesh.
Yeah. So, of course, because it's a gift, you know, SARS is going to step in and say that's a taxable income. In fact, they initially suggested that she pay 110.3 million rand of taxable income, but it was later set to 44.175. Oh, I sound like Zuma for a moment here. Article is misquoted. It has put the dot in the wrong place, so it doesn't make sense. But yes, in essence, it's about 44 million rand.
Doesn't this also tell you that, like, again, the greatest superpower you can be born with is just to be born beautiful? Here she is with the guy. This is the guy on the screen.
Well, you've got the beautiful
screen
and the rich.
Ooh. Yes, but this is the point. They find each other, right? Like, the rich people want beautiful people around them all the time. Beautiful people want money. So there's Candace Vanamadva and the Lebanese Prime Minister Hariri. And he was the one who gave her the gift. I mean, it's such an open transaction. I don't know how anyone could have a problem with it. I totally get that there'd be people who say, that's disgusting. If you're a pretty looking girl and you get offered millions, I mean, it was what, $16 million total. So what are you going to do? Say, oh, no, I'm too moral and ethical for that. I don't know what the exact details of their arrangement were, but perhaps this guy's just loaded with cash and he really just loved her that much that he wanted to give her this gift and there was no expectation from him. Who knows? Yeah. Obviously, it's unlikely because, you know, if someone's going to make that kind of an investment, I think you know what they want. But again, if she didn't look pretty didn't have money, none of this would have happened.
It's like a very old school kind of deal. But I mean, I don't blame her for taking it to court and trying to fight it because, it, you know, 44 million rand is definitely worth fighting over.
Oh, hell yeah.
Especially if you have the money to fight it.
And then I have to say, I mean, like, a lot of people go, oh, you know, that it's right then that she pays her share of taxes. I've never believed in that. I think tax is just theft from the state. It's just the state is the biggest gun in the room. And they point their gun at you and they go, pay. And you just don't have an option. Like, what did the South African government have to do with this gift? A private individual giving another private individual money for something. What role does government have in that?
Yes.
If I wasn't driving over potholes and everything worked in the country, then I might have been okay with it. But no.
No, I don't see anything. I mean, there's just nothing in this that makes government look good. Again, if all of us just decided tomorrow we don't want to do this anymore, we're not paying these assholes taxes anymore, it would all come to a grinding halt. All of the stupidity would end, but none of the service delivery that we wish we had would end because it's already ended in most places. I mean, some people are sitting in the dark right now. There are some people who they haven't got jobs anymore because of stupid lockdown regulations and things. So don't tell me that it's going to get worse. It's not. I actually think if we all stopped paying tax tomorrow, it wouldn't get worse. It might get better. We'd get these guys out. There'd be less theft and corruption because there wouldn't be anything to steal. And little communities would kind of look after themselves. They'd find ways. And I think the big things like, you know, roads and electricity, we'd figure it out. Because people are smart that way. South Africans especially, very resourceful. Don't tell me that we need a government because we need to maintain our sovereignty. Our borders are wide open. People can walk over the border anytime to this country or outside of this country. No one's controlling that stuff. So what do you need them for? You know, we've spoken about this a million times. Anyway, so I think I believe it's wrong. They should give Candace that money back. First of all, because she's good looking. And second of all, because it's got nothing to do with the government. Really?
Yes.
You agree, man?
And I completely agree. And I've seen the comments here. She even bought herself a house in Clifton.
Yeah, apparently. Marco says you should see her house in Clifton. It is insane. Wow. Jeez. Well, good for her. What else? Listen, you got to invest that money in something. And property in Cape Town is not a bad investment. So that's smart. I mean, it would be so sad and pathetic. Imagine if she bought like just clothes and a shiny car. You know, Imagine
yeah,
she
or,
bought.
Or she ends up like, yeah?
No, like a convertible car and shoes and clothes. That would be such a waste of money. And I mean, even with what 16 million, you could piss away a lot of money on shoes and clothes.
Yeah, like the people on I Blew It.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
That's that sad.
That's such a cool show.
Yeah.
By the way, we've got to get to Dr. Hanan just now. We'll ask him about a couple of the things that are on your mind this morning. If you want to know what's going on, then let us know. If you want to ask us a question, that is, if you want to speak to Dr. Hanan, send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to talk about that. Now, I want to know, while we're talking about expensive things, Mash, DJ Maphorisa got himself a 500,000 rand Birkin bag. Talk about shopping, and yes. I blew it. So what is this? I mean, like, what makes this bag worth 500,000 rand?
Firstly, I myself don't know what makes it worth 500,000 rand because this is just a bag.
Yes.
Nothing special about it. It's just cow leather, nothing insane, no crazy amounts of gold. You should see this bag. It is so basic looking. I'll just walk past someone in the street actually holding this bag. There's nothing unique about it.
Yeah.
It has no loud branding. There's no flowers or anything all over it. Nothing. It is so just average. And he spent, to be exact, 477,000, it's reported, that he spent on this bag. And Twitter was just not having it. Twitter was actually coming after him, saying that, you could have done this with the money. You could have bought a family that is in need, a house. You could have bought groceries for so many families. You could have
but
done this.
But it's his money. He
that.
Can do what he wants with his money.
Exactly.
Not yours.
And that is something. And that is something that happens all the time, that I see all the time on social media, that whenever somebody actually works hard and gets themselves something from the hard work to just reward themselves for all the hard work they've done, all of a sudden it's a thing of, no, we don't want to support you because, oh, you owe us now. Or, oh, what about the poor people? What about the hungry people? And it's like, but I worked hard for this money.
Do what you want with your own money. I love the way everybody on Twitter wants to tell everybody who's got money and they don't. They want to tell them how to spend it. Like some...
Yeah, I mean, there was...
Some nobody, yeah. Some blue tick, not even blue tick, some little, like, no profile picture idiot on Twitter is, like, telling everyone else, you should spend your money. If you know how to spend money and you know how to make money, why don't you go and earn some of your own? How about that?
Exactly. I mean, I saw one comment where someone was like, he could have just bought some poor family a house with that money. He could have bought a family a house. I was just so touched by this. I actually commented on that and I was like, okay, so where's the house you bought a poor family?
Yeah,
if he
exactly.
should buy one, then where's the one you bought?
Right.
Yeah. People feel so entitled to tell people how to spend their money. It's that age old thing of as soon as someone becomes wealthy, all of a sudden we all feel entitled to how they spend their money.
Yeah. It's like when Elon Musk was buying Twitter, someone was like, oh, well, we should really spend the money on this and that. I also saw, was it AKA who was asking on Twitter a while ago, Elon, why don't you come and help us sort out our electricity problems? Like, first of all, Elon Musk doesn't give a shit about South Africa, and neither does he have to. You don't have to care about your country. That's such an old school thing, too. This idea of patriotism, you know. What was the Wilfred Owen poem? Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. You don't have to care about what your country's up to. That's an old way of thinking. And in this country, imagine if Elon Musk gave us a battery for every house. And it cost him like a couple of billion dollars, but it's nothing to him. And then I promise you, because he'd have to deal with government in some way, within 3 months, most of the batteries that were intended for us would have been stolen.
That's true. That is true.
Anyway.
People would have sold their batteries.
Yeah, so you want to buy a Birkin bag. I mean, I know, Leanne, you've got a couple of handbags there that are worth 500,000 rand. I know that. So.
Yeah. Got this one hanging here, is...
That's a million rand bag, that.
Oh, Leanne, I'm coming over, chair.
But also, it's so relative. I mean, are you telling me then, person commenting on Twitter, that when you get a 60,000 rand bonus at work, you're going to spend 50,000 rand on it helping someone?
No, of course not.
Of course not.
No, but the people who say that are the ones who are the least charitable themselves, which is what Mash pointed out when he said to them, well, where's the poor person's house that you helped pay for? Because of course they have.
Exactly.
Truly good, charitable people quietly do these things and don't really involve themselves with other people's business. Anyway, listen, we've got to get to Dr. Hanan because there's a huge amount of stuff going on today and I don't want to miss out on any of it. So let's get straight to it. I'm going to also welcome Ali, who's going to join us in just a moment. She's going to tell us her story and she's got a question for Dr. Hanan. It's going to be okay with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. Alison sent us this email and she joins us on the show to talk with Dr. Hanan today. She says, many of us in South Africa do not have the option to live elsewhere and are either thinking of emigrating or are actively in the process of doing so after events of the last year or so. Leaving the country of your birth, which you love, is an incredibly difficult decision, especially when you feel that you're doing so not because you want to, but because you have to. There are all sorts of emotions involved, fear of the unknown, second-guessing your choices, and the most difficult one to deal with is guilt. I have so many friends and family members who are going through this now, and I'd like to hear Dr. Hanan's advice on how to process these emotions during the stress of a relocation, which involves a new house, a new job, and a new country. So I think that's such a good question. Let's put her on and get to meet Ali. How are you doing, Alison? Nice to see you.
Morning. Nice to meet you all.
So is it you that's...
I'm super excited to be on. I've been following you guys, Gareth and Leanne, since 5FM days. So
oh, nice.
Super excited.
Well, it's nice to meet you. Is it you who's thinking of moving or is it friends and family?
So my sister left 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it sort of sparked the conversation with myself and my husband as to should we now be doing this as well. My other sister's already been there. She's been there for 10 years.
Where have they gone to, by the way?
In the UK.
Okay.
The UK.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a tough thing. I mean, once someone's decided, I try to not talk them out of it, you know, because it's really their decision and you kind of just support them and do what you can. It's a very tough call, though, because you do start thinking. I mean, most of the people I was at Varsity with, I would say a third of them are left in South Africa. The other two thirds have gone elsewhere. And as you say, like most of us who are left here now are either looking at it and going, well, I can't afford to do it. Or you're just going to see where it goes because you don't think necessarily your opportunities are better anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for me, I was always one of those people who sort of looked at people leaving and went like, what are you doing? This is a lovely country and et cetera, et cetera. And there've been a number of things in the last year that, I mean, I'm from KZN, so the riots were a big factor for us.
It
was quite a scary situation. We've had the floods, we've got water shedding, we've got load shedding. There's this whole raft of weird legislation the government's passing that they think is going to create more jobs but isn't. And, you know, there's a whole lot of things that make you think, what am I actually doing here?
Well, I mean, I'm not embarrassed to admit it now that my position has changed over, you know, the course of the last 15 years. It's gone from, oh, you want to leave South Africa? What an idiot you are, to, I totally understand. And you go ahead and do that. You do you. I mean, I'm really not passionate about either side of the argument. People must do whatever they feel is right for them. I don't know that there's a right answer or a wrong answer. But I do think the one thing that I have kind of picked up about the people who move and are happy and the people who are moving and are unhappy, and a lot of people who are unhappy pretend to be happy because they don't want anyone to know that they've made the wrong decision, right? So the thing that I think differentiates the two is that the people who are happy now, wherever they might be in the world, and they've moved to very, you know, different locations, very diverse places. The people who are happy have moved for a reason. In other words, they've moved there for something positive. Either they wanted to take up a new job, they wanted to explore the world, they wanted to send their kids to a school in another country. There are a whole bunch of reasons that they might have done that. But if the reason is positive, as far as I can tell, then positive things happen. If the reason is negative, absolutely. It's like if you're trying to get away from something or you've had a very bad experience here, or, and listen, I'm sympathetic. I understand why, you know, somebody might want to leave if something awful has happened to them or their family. But I don't think that a negative reason to go is a good reason. It's got to be something positive.
No, absolutely, yeah. No, I totally agree. And I've seen the same thing. And I think that's been part of where we've been with our decision is that I don't want to leave just because I feel like I have to. I want to leave because I feel like I'm going to something, that there's something I'm excited about. And I mean, there are those emotions as well. You know, London is a huge sort of door opening career-wise for myself and my husband, and that's exciting. So, you know, it's
well, let's bring on Dr. Hanan. His camera is off because he's load shedding this morning, but he is there to listen to you. Hey, Doc.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. You would be sitting in the dark, so we wouldn't see you anyway. But I'm glad that you're...
I'm in complete darkness.
I'm glad we managed to get you on. So, Dr. Hanan, you might have heard all of that when we were talking to Ali about like her sister moving and the idea of emigrating. And it's a big decision. I mean, it's probably one of those four or five things that people are most apprehensive and nervous about, right? I mean, moving to another country is a whole big traumatic deal.
Completely. So, you know, as we said many times on the show, the human mind really likes predictability, stability, consistency, and creating a home is not just it's not just kind of a couple word sentence. It's building memories, creating relationships, building and engaging in memories and you know, from your kids going to a certain school to you growing up in a particular place and uprooting yourself from all that and that environment and putting yourself in a brand new environment is incredibly traumatic. Mm. Incredibly traumatic. If anybody ever tells you that they've left a country to another country and that was easy, they're lying. It's not possible. It's an absolute lie because, again, to go from place A to place B, even though place B might be better for you for whatever reason, and we could discuss why somebody should be moving, it's still the brain needs time to adjust. And that adjustment period is incredibly difficult. I've got, and I've had the privilege over the last, especially 2.5 years, to speak to people from all over the world. You know, before COVID, I can tell you that I've had conversations and patients, expats, so South Africans living in London and South Africans living in Australia and South Africans living in the UK. And they've all told me the same thing, that it's very, very difficult, very challenging. And over the last 2.5 years, I've had the privilege of speaking to Australians living in Australia and Canadians living in Canada. And the common denominator is that everybody is struggling.
Yeah.
Everybody is struggling. There's no perfect place. There's no perfect environment. There's no perfect situation that where, you know, there's no utopia. There's no place that you can go to where there's no stress. One thing that's in common amongst everybody, human nature, is that suffering is part of the deal. Sacrifice is part of the deal. Disappointment is part of the deal. That's life, and it's how you manage it and what kind of challenge you choose to live with. So does South Africa have like smaller nuances and smaller different challenges? Of course, to anywhere else, of course. But the common denominator is this disappointment and hurt and frustration, everyone suffering everywhere. It's kind of you choose your challenge wherever you go. But to your point, Ali, it is very challenging for somebody to move. For yourself, if you are thinking of moving, it's an incredibly traumatic experience. To lose somebody to another country is incredibly traumatic because a part of your lifestyle, a part of your memory, a part of your world has been kind of pulled away, and suddenly you have to adjust to that reality too. It's incredibly challenging, for no doubt about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's exactly the sort of struggle that I have with this whole situation is it's not a black and white. As you say, everywhere's got problems. So I'm fully aware I'm not going to move to the UK and suddenly everything's going to be a bed of roses. I know there's going to be challenges and issues that side as well. And it's really trying to balance in my head the frustrations and the issues that I see in South Africa, the opportunities that I see there, and to balance those two things and sort of on the balance of things make the decision. And then once you've made the decision, obviously, as you say, Gareth, you've got to then be positive about it and just go and do the best that you can, you know?
So Doc, I think that, you know, we're all kind of on the same page here, but what do you think it is that makes it so difficult? Is it abandoning those memories, especially if you know, you're in your 30s, 40s maybe, because that's the age that a lot of people might be thinking about it. Maybe you decide to do it a lot earlier, who knows? But is it that collection of memories? Is it that what do you call it, sunken cost almost, of this is where I am. I've spent my entire life making friendships, connecting myself to you know, various other people in business or in romantic relationships or in family relationships, and now I have to start from scratch again. Is that the worst part of it?
So let's put it this way. Well, if you had to ask the average person, is stress good or bad? The average person will tell you stress is bad. Mm-hmm. But it's not as simple as that. The truth is that in life, guys, whatever you value comes married with stress. Value comes married with stress. That's the way it works. That's the law of the land. Value equals stress. So I value my kids, it comes with stress. I value my marriage, it comes with stress. I value my job, it comes with stress. I value my health, it comes with stress. That is the nature of the way it works. Mm-hmm. So if somebody had to say to me, Hanan, how do I eliminate stress? Well, the answer is, well, eliminate everything that you value and that you can't do, because then you get depressed. So when somebody says to me, I'm stressed, I go, well, good for you. Obviously you value something. Mm. Now there's a difference between healthy and unhealthy stress. So healthy stress is when I focus on or stressed over anything that I value, but I have a framework to manage it. Unhealthy stress is when I'm stressed over something that I value, but with no framework, with no blueprint, no method, no way to actually take control over it. Now, so the next question, and to your point, Gareth, how do we increase or decrease something that we value? Well, value is decidable what you're invested in. Mm. So the more you invest into something, the more valuable it becomes, the more there's stress. Because remember, value equals stress. So the more you invest into something, the more valuable it becomes, the more there's stress. So the analogy is, if I invest R1 million into a business and it fails, I'm devastated. If I invest nothing into a business and it fails, I don't care because I'm not invested into it.
Right.
So to your point, Gareth, the reason why leaving a country is so devastating is because, can you think of your investment in a country? And it's not just in a country, by the way, it's in relationships, it's in memories, it's in growing up, it's in familiarity, which we mustn't just take for granted, which is very powerful.
Yep.
So think about the coins that you invest day in, day out in a particular environment that you're about to let go of. So it's like investing, again, I'll use money as an example, it's like investing R1 million on a daily basis, and suddenly at the age of 30, 40, 50, you have to let it go. You have to let it go. You have to shut down the business.
Wow.
I mean, that immediately comes with stress. It's devastating. It's devastating. That's why. So whatever you invest into is whatever you value comes with stress. And the reason, by the way, for anybody that's interested, the reason why value comes with stress is because the moment you value something, there's always the potential of losing it. And that's where it comes with stress.
Right.
So that's why value comes with stress. So that's why leaving a country is so difficult, because you're so heavily invested into it.
So Ali, is there anything you want to ask Dr. Hanan before we let him go? Because there are a couple other questions I've got, but you're the one who gets to pitch your question to him. I mean, this is your free counseling and therapy session.
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose my question would be, you know, how do you actually sort of deal with that stress of this whole move and everything while still having these other emotions? And I think for me, really the biggest emotion actually is guilt. Having always been a patriotic person, I feel incredibly guilty about leaving and leaving the people, like my gardener, my domestic worker, all the people who rely on me and my little ecosphere, you know, and I almost feel like I'm abandoning ship. And yeah, how do you sort of work through that and actually go with a positive mindset?
Right. So I'll mention a couple of things. Number one, that whenever one of my greatest, most important principles to live by is never, ever sit on the fence. Don't allow yourself to sit on the fence, because you just bleed inefficiency when you're on the fence.
Right.
I'll tell my patients, and the way I live my life is, I would rather make the wrong decision than make no decision. Because nothing happens when you make no decision. There's no feedback. You're not getting any feedback to let you know how you can U-turn or you can correct your framework to get to the desired goals. So number one, is you got to commit to a position and marry a position. The other thing that you have to understand is that life very rarely, maybe a handful of times in your lifetime, will offer you a position that is 100% right from the start. Life most of the time will give you a 60-40 or 55-45 or mostly a 51-49 decision. And you have to sometimes make a very difficult decision at a cost, at a sacrifice. And leaving the country, there's no question about it, there's a sacrifice. But you have to commit to a position. The third thing that I will say is that the definition of suffering is committing to a position and fantasizing about the alternative. I've said this before. So being married and fantasize about being single. Oof. Living in Joburg and fantasize about living in Cape Town. Wanting to the discussion you were having this morning, guys, wanting to lose weight and fantasizing about the chocolate cake.
That is
a definition of suffering. Suffering is committing to a position and fantasizing about the alternative. So that's to your point. Once you commit to a position, so you've done your maths, and maybe we'll do a longer show on how you can actually work out what will be the 51-49% decision. But once you commit to a position, absolutely immerse yourself in it. Immerse yourself in it knowing that guilt and disappointment and imposter syndrome. So do you know what imposter syndrome is? So questioning your decision is part of the deal. That's the sacrifice. That's the sacrifice of picking the 51, because there's still 49% or 49 reasons of why you shouldn't go. There's 51 why you should and there's 49. That comes part and parcel of the, that's part and parcel of the deal. Adulting is accepting a position that comes with a sacrifice.
Yeah.
Adulting is accepting a position that comes with a sacrifice, and guilt is part of it. So, but how do you get rid of the guilt? Immerse yourself in your new position until your brain adjusts. Once your brain adjusts, the guilt goes away. But the reason why the guilt, you might say to me, but Hanan, so many people move to a country or so many people make a decision and the guilt doesn't go away for years, is because they haven't immersed themselves in a position. Guilt only goes away if you immerse yourself 100% in your decision, 100%. Because if you go to another country and fantasize about South Africa and what you're leaving behind, the guilt will never go away. Once you commit to a position, once you break up with somebody, once you choose to lose weight, once you choose to whatever your decision is, immerse yourself in it until your brain adjusts. Once your brain adjusts to the new reality, that's when the guilt goes away. But you have to immerse yourself in it without living in the alternative.
So then I'm assuming, Ali, you've made your decision and that you are now going to have to come to terms with it. I mean, Dr. Hanan has been so clear about that. Immerse yourself in the decision. Don't look back. Keep forging forward. And the stress will come down. The guilt will come down. But you've got to actually pour yourself into this new decision.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. Hanan.
And don't worry about us. I mean, like you say, you know, patriotism and, you know, your domestic worker and all. We'll be fine. We'll figure it out. We'll have to make a plan. Don't worry about the rest of us. This is about you and your life, and you've got to do what's right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. Doc, thank you very much. It's always good to have you on. And
I hope
your load shedding isn't too bad today. In fact, I hope that's the case for you too, Ali. We will see you, Dr. Hanan, next week, Monday. And we've got more for you in the next hour of the show. CliffCentral.com. Don't go anywhere. It is a Monday. Tell us what you're up to in the comments. CliffCentral.com.